talk about a new frontier this morning. Hope the music gave it away. We're talking space. But in fact, we're talking a one-way trip to Mars. It's a concept that many of us would find absolutely terrifying. But for the remaining 705 candidates hoping to be on the first Mars One flight, it could be a dream come true. It may be 10 years off or thereabouts, but hopefuls are already preparing themselves for life in the first human settlement on the Red Planet. Among the potential settlers are a number of Australian candidates, including Diane McGrath from Melbourne. She's on the line with us this morning. A very good morning to you, Diane.
Good morning, Hamish. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thanks. Let's get some of the background here. The first question, why would anyone want to go and spend the rest of their life on the planet Mars?
Look, it's a great question, and it's one, I think it's probably the most common question people ask me when they find out that I'm a shortlisted Mars One candidate. They go, why on earth do you want to go to Mars? And I guess it's a difficult question to try and answer because there are so many reasons behind why I'd want to do it. I think it's, a lot of it, though, harkens back to that aspect of exploration that's kind of inherent in the human spirit. Like, why on earth did our first settlers come here to Australia? Why did the pilgrims go to the US and those Chinese explorers that explored so much more vastly than we in Western society understand? Why do they do it? It's to understand what's out there, where we fit in the world. A lot of it comes from, I think, our base need for our curiosity to be met. And I think it's a great way that they've named the current Mars rover, of course, is Curiosity. So I think it's a fantastic illustration of that aspect of the human spirit. So that's a strong part of why for me. I just feel I need to know, and it needs to be a part of my life and the chapter of the next chapter of humanity, I think. And I'd like to be a part of that.
Can you tell us a bit about the Mars One project? What does it involve? How have you reached this point where you're among the candidates that remain shortlisted?
Yeah, sure. Hamish, as you mentioned, it is a one-way trip. So the Mars One mission aims to establish the first permanent human settlement on Mars. So they'll be sending, in about 10 years' time, four astronauts, so two men and two women, to go and start to establish the first settlement. And every 2 years, another four astronauts will come up, and there isn't a return. And the reason for that is currently, and in the next 10 years, there isn't the technology to be able to bring people back. I know that NASA are working on some programs that will have return journeys for their astronauts, but they're about another roughly 10 years behind the track. Now, how the Mars One mission has got to where it is at the moment when it comes to astronaut selection, they put out a call for applicants, because I think they must have thought, how on earth are we going to get people to go? So they put out this broad call for anyone in the world who wants to go to Mars for the rest of their life. And that was in 2013. And when I first saw it in June, I just couldn't help myself. I had to apply. I was just driven to. And I was one of about 200,000 people worldwide. And that was trimmed down through review of the application process to about 1,000 just after Christmas in 2013. And then we all had to go and do a medical assessment, and that trimmed us down to 705, and right now we're in the selection committee interview process, and there's actually there's a few less of us in that now. There's 660, and we'll hear after that process is finished. And as you can imagine, interviewing 660 people takes a while.
And it's intense psychological profiling, isn't it? It's not about whether you really want to go. It's to determine how they can put small groups, pods of four, in fact, together that will work well together and can coexist easily.
Oh, absolutely. And the gentleman who's in the head of the selection committee, that's really his area of expertise, is that psychological profiling. He needs to make sure that team of four really does have the right stuff mentally, as well as being able to meet each other's, I suppose, gaps when it comes to skills and so forth. You need to knit as a unit and be able to deal with any sorts of challenges. And we'll be going through training in isolation units too. So we're locking us away for months on end to see how we do deal with that sort of issue, as well as just going through the tasks and testing the technologies and so forth along the way every year, pretty much.
You are not an astronaut. You don't work in the space flight industry. Explain that to me, because I've spoken to a lot of people involved with this program, and they're not actually looking for people who have expertise in this area.
No, that's right. And which is why when I saw it was an opportunity to do something which is, you know, childhood dream sort of thing, I jumped at it. I'm not an astronaut, but what they will be obviously looking for are people who have the capacity to learn. Because when we get to Mars, we're essentially a construction crew that has to have all of the skills that a small community and society will have. So everything from fixing solar panels to doing minor dentistry and medical procedures and engineering abilities to growing food. So I don't have naturally an aeronautical engineering background or as an astronaut, but I do have a lot of other expertise that they can draw from and multiple university degrees. So skills regardless, it's still going to go back to, as you say, Hamish, that psychological thing. It's going to be about how people work well together as a team and how they can deal with the challenges.
And how is it shaping your life today? You're obviously having to have conversations with loved ones, maybe your partner, children, family, parents, who knows? I don't know that much about you, but could you tell us how it's affected the way you're living your life today?
Initially, when I signed up, I didn't expect it to make a big difference to my life unless I got down to the final few, but it's been surprisingly a greater impact than I thought it would be. There's obviously a lot of study involved. We have to learn a lot about Mars, and naturally, fair enough, if you're going to live there, you've got to know what you're going to be facing. But also a lot of the attention in the media and people want to understand my opinion on various aspects, which are sometimes ethical questions. With regards to my family and friends, I think it's helped me reprioritize things in my life as well. It's not as if I have a death sentence per se, but when you know you've potentially only got 10 years left on this planet and you might not see people much after that except online, you do tend to think about things in a different way and make sure you make the most of these moments that are here.
And how difficult have those conversations been?
Look, they haven't been that bad. I'm a bit of an adventurer, Hamish, and I've done some pretty interesting things, from jumping out of planes to running long distances in
marathons. Come on, going to Mars forever, isn't it?
It's a bit different. My mother was not exactly thrilled to the back teeth when she first heard about it. She did say she wasn't too sure about that idea of not coming back. But in the end, I mean, she's been a fantastic supporter and believes it's just a great opportunity for me and my dad too, who just wants to support any of my dreams, which are just wonderful. And most of my friends are like that too.
Wow. One of the candidates that I met with in America, a young woman from Brooklyn, is due to get married to her fiancé, I think, next year. And she said that their vows will be not till death do us part, but till Mars do us part.
It's funny. My partner says that she's okay with being Plan B to Mars.
It's a very tolerant partner.
Yeah, she's pretty good.
I think a lot of people will look at this project and the people involved, because there are still some scientific things that need to be resolved before it can actually happen.
Yes.
To do with the air that is breathed on board the pods and the growing of plants and what that will do to the makeup of it and how to filter that out properly. But aside from the science, there will be people that look at it and think the people involved in this are crazy. They're just mad. But the surprising thing in talking to a few of you is that you all seem quite sensible and level-headed about and realistic about it.
And I think one of the things I love about the Mars One project as well is that the incredible pool of potential astronauts is a great reflection of our real community. So if they're looking to establish a new settlement, a new community of us on another planet, it'd be lovely if it's not this ultra-refined group that are extremely select of white Anglo-Saxon male astronauts, that it's something which represents the diversity of culture, of experience, of ethnicity, of language, of gender. And so I think it's a pretty exciting part of it, and we're all just ordinary people in the end.
All right, Diane, we'll have to leave it there. Thanks so much for talking to us this morning, and please do keep in touch along the way.
Will do. Thanks for having me on, Hamish.
We might speak to you next time from Mars. Diane McGrath there, one of the candidates hoping to be a settler on Mars. It's 8:43.